Well, thank you for inviting me. This is a pleasure. I'm going to just introduce what SRE is at Google, and let me just get into that. I already have the introduction. So SRE is short for Site Reliability Engineering, and basically it's keep the site up, whatever it takes. So the site here is google.com, it's Google Maps, it's Gmail, it's Docs, Sheets, anything you use at Google, there's a site reliability team that keeps it up and running. If it's down for any reason, it doesn't matter why, it's the SRE's responsibility to keep it up. So why reliability? Why is it so important? Well, without the site being up, it's the number one feature. You know, do you prefer Gmail 2016 with an empty inbox, but that's my inbox? Or do you prefer seeing a website that's down? We call it 500. 500 is a HTTP error code for an error, so that's why we call it 500. So obviously having a site that's up is extremely important for you, the customers. I'm assuming everybody uses Google sometime during the day. And of course, it's extremely important for us because, well, it pays my bills. So it's really easy to take reliability for granted. And by the time something breaks, though, there's typically any number of things that have gone wrong. Not just like one thing that broke on the site, but a few things. And at that point, it might be additional work to bring the site back up. By the way, I'm okay with, if I say a word or we have a lot of acronyms and phrases at Google, so if I say something that I just kind of assume you know, just feel free to interrupt, and I don't mind questions through the talk. So the other key thing is we need to work on reliability all the time. We don't work on it just when the site's broken. It's always a constant effort. Basically, site reliability engineering, we're always working to put ourselves out of a job. That's kind of how we think about it. So what is, we work at very large scale. So Google is one of the largest internet, or it's one of the largest computer companies in the world. Just the scale of data, exabytes of data, hundreds of thousands of computers we work with. One of the big problems we have is how do you scale Google's computer size with the number of people that it takes to manage it. So, if Google keeps on adding computers because the world keeps on, there's more and more people coming on the internet in third world countries, then the problem is how do we scale the number of computers without scaling the number of people? Typically, we might have, let's say, I'm just making this, 1,000 people working in an organization. If the number of computers doubles in size, then we don't want the number of people to manage those computers go from 1,000 to 2,000. Because communication costs goes a square of the number. So you're not just doubling your communication costs go by a factor of 4 as you grow. So this is one of the big challenges these days, is how do we keep on growing Google, but not growing the organization, the number of people we want? We call it sublinear. We want sublinear growth in the number of SRE people versus the size of the company. The other thing we work on is availability and efficiency. So, you know, even though Google's up, you know, if Google Maps is taking a while to load, you know, that's a frustrating experience for you. So that's another big aspect of what site reliability people. And we're continuously taking on new services. So if somebody has an idea and they spin up some brand new, like when YouTube joined, you know, they had a site SRE group that got assigned to them. But the one big thing is we always solve problems with software. In a lot of companies, there is an operations layer, but we think of SRE as above that. So there are people that swap computers, fix disk drives, fix RAM. But at the SRE level, that's like it's an API, it's a function call to have somebody handle that. So we're above the strict what we call operations layer. One of the key things is we don't want to be a reactive team for problems. We want to be a proactive team. So we're always working on improving. If you have a site, you're always monitoring yourself. You're monitoring your performance. You're making things that are working correctly. So we're always improving those services for the internal monitoring and alerting to make sure that we're keeping up on that. But the other key thing is that we also want to help the development. So SRE is kind of like an operations team, but there's also, we have a partners, we have dev, we call it dev or developers, that make the new features. You know, so if there's a new feature on your phone, your Android phone, or Google Maps, or Gmail, there's a development team that wrote that. And we want to work with them as quickly as possible so they can get those new features out to you, the customers. And the last big thing is we take on-call responsibility. So what is on-call? On-call is basically you're carrying a pager. So an example, I work on a security-related team that provides internal security access for Googlers to get into resources at work. So if I take my laptop to a Starbucks and I want to get work done, I'm going through some proxies that Google has to reach resources in our corporate network. So those proxies are managed by my team, but if those proxies go down, then all the Googlers, we call them people that work at Google, Googlers, they stop working. So we carry a pager. We have like a 5-minute response time if we get paged. And a typical shift will be on my team, you'll work Monday from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. and then Tuesday 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. all the way through Sunday. The 9 p.m. to 9 a.m. is handed off to, I have a sister team in Dublin, and they pick up the pager then. Now, why do we have a geographic diversity? Because we have a 5-minute response time, so you cannot be expected to wake up at 3 a.m. if there's a page and be, you know, lucid enough to respond to that. So, yes. The nice advantage of having a team in Dublin is we actually visit them once a year, so I get to go to Dublin, have some Guinness, and they come to L.A. once a year. So one of the things is key is we work on engineering software solutions, not just administration. You know, we don't want people to run a lot of commands all the time. The goal is to automate those problems away. We also do a lot of design reviews with the developers of new services to make sure that they're properly structured, the architecture's sound, the problems you run into, you can address. So if you do get paged, a lot of times your number one goal is, if you get paged, is to keep the service running. So there's a typical, like, attitude, like, hey, I'm a hero. I might try to, like, let's say Google Maps is down. You're like, well, let me go and debug this and figure out why it's down. No, the answer is, like, if it's down in a particular reason, you might turn that region off and direct traffic to another region. So let's say we have a data center in Taiwan and there's a problem with it and all the people from Sydney reaching there have the problem. Your goal is not to, like, figure out why it is. Your goal is to shift the traffic from the people in Sydney to another data center, let's say in Mountain View. And then while that site is down and the traffic's not going there, then you can figure out what's going on with it. But, you know, the number one issue is to make sure your users are taken care of and they're able to get their work done. Now, it might be slower, of course, but at least it's a degradation of service, not a complete failure of service. I mentioned development. We work a lot with the development our development colleagues. We do design reviews. We spot flaws in their design. And we encourage the best practices working with them. So again, we develop software that benefits our users, you, and improves the reliability of the services and the manageability and the efficiency. Speed is of critical importance to Google. So I kind of touched upon this, but we do, a lot of times when, let's say Gmail was brand new and there was not an SRE organization that took care of that service. So typically there's what we call, it goes through an onboarding process where Google, the SRE org will review this whole service and basically look at all the issues like, is there logging? Is there alerting? Is there monitoring? And have the dev team force them to put those things in before we will pick up the pager for them. So it's not a guarantee that an SRE team will go on call for a dev team at Google, but typically that's why the dev team has an incentive to do that. I kind of touched on the on-call here already. So, the other big thing is like, The goal, yeah, so the 6 weeks is, so a team, like my team in LA has six people on it. So your on-call goes through a six-week cycle. So you'll be on call for 1 week, and then you'll go off on call for 5 weeks, and then you go on call again for a week. Actually, one of the great things about Google is they do compensate you for being on call, not like some other companies I've worked with. So it's a nice additional perk. So one of the key things is, though, if you can automate it, then the goal is to make issues that happen handled by a computer. So in my example, well, let's say the Taiwan data center goes down for some reason. If this happens enough, like maybe at least once a quarter, you're going to set up the automation to automatically shift the traffic away from Taiwan. You don't want somebody to have to, actually a human, to get involved with this, ideally. Because one of the large goals is to reduce the mean time to recovery. You know, the longer it takes that site to come back means there's a financial impact to Google and a customer experience impact, of course. So now if something happens maybe just once a year, then we'll say, yeah, the cost to maybe automate this will not be enough. But if it happens, an issue happens on a weekly or enough basis, then we will automate the issue away so that a human being doesn't have to get involved. Basically, the point of us getting paged is to handle the stuff that the computers haven't been set up to handle. So we use, in practice, we use the exact same tools as developers, the same editors, code. We have the same coding standards. We have unit tests just like them, and we are software developers, and I'll get into more what kind of people Google hires in practice. And the other big thing is Google does go down at times. You know, there's always stuff that happens, and Google has a blameless culture for fixing issues. So in practice, we found that 70% of failures are due to configuration pushes or pushing new code, or so there's oftentimes some human was involved in an outage. And in that case, the principle is, as long as the people that were working had good intentions, there's no fault for them, you know. So if you made an honest mistake and you pushed a bad config and something happened, then, you know, it's not like we don't blame that engineer. You blame, like, what failed in the process that could happen? You know, what, we didn't check the config, or we should put some validation in the config to prevent something bad from going out in the first place. That's the kind of questions we ask. So, that's one of the best things I love about working at Google, is that there's stuff that I've broken stuff, and I wrote my own postmortem and filed bugs for things that needed to get fixed. And it wasn't like, hey, you screwed up, you know. It's like, okay, what can we do to improve the process that this doesn't happen again? So I kind of touched upon this earlier. Organizationally, it's independent business units, and each major product area, we call it at Google, like Gmail, Maps, Search, has its own SRE associated with it. So the when I say the word service, I mean like Google, like Gmail, Maps. That's a service is a general phrase for any, well, specific, unique service. So YouTube is considered a service. Gmail is a service. Maps, you know, Search is a service. So I'm just going to use that. Please interrupt me if I use a word that, you know, just it's so natural for me. So services are jointly owned by the dev team and the SRE team, and both can choose to work on the SRE side of things like logging, monitoring, alerting. And SREs are in short supply and can easily work in other services. Now, somebody actually asked me this, and I think the reason is a lot of people that do coding just love straight-up coding, and they might not enjoy the more aspects of running a service, which is definitely distinct from just being writing code all the time. But in practice, what we do is we write a lot of config stuff. We'll write tooling to roll out, say, we bring up a new data center in Taiwan. There's a lot of work to do that, so you're going to automate that. So that's a different type of coding than it'd be if you're just writing a new feature for, like, Gmail. And one of the key distinctions is that the headcount for SRE comes from the product area. So if Gmail needs to do SRE work, they're going to give up a dev person to do that. And that has some incentives later, which I'm going to touch on. So how is it different from dev work, SRE? We're typically not feature-driven workload. You know, we don't have a gun to our heads that said you have to release this new feature by Christmas. It's more just ongoing maintenance. And we typically don't do front-end related development. So front-end means JavaScript, HTML. We're typically more in the back-end, working on job management, logging, monitoring, and things. So we're not so JavaScript, Ajax-y kind of heavy work. I mean, we do set up internal websites, but they're not, like, meant for internal or external. Like, you would never see an SRE website. So they don't have to be nice and polished and to the degree that we would polish a website for you. So I'm going to go into a distinction that for those of you who have worked at tech companies. So I mentioned devs, and now I'm going to introduce the word ops. So ops is short for the word operations. So one of the things that Google solved is this conflict between dev and ops, which I'm going to go to. So if you're a developer and you're working on Gmail, then your number one goal is to get new features out, right? If you're working on Google Maps, you want to have a new feature, let's say self-driving cars involved, you know, your goal is to get that out. And as I said earlier, the number one issue that causes issues with, let's say, downtime at Google is pushing new code or new configuration. So dev is incentivized to, of course, push new features, but the people like SRE or ops in other organizations, they like stable, they don't like changes, because they're the one that carries the pager. So, of course, you know, if they're going to push a lot of code and the site goes down, they're picking up the pieces. So this is a tension between dev and ops. And the question is, how did Google solve this? I'll get into that in a sec. And the other issue is that a lot of times development has a lot more things going on. So they're maybe rolling out new features. There's this thing called flag flips. So let's say if you have, I'll give an example from Facebook. Let's say if Facebook has a new feature, they're going to write the code for it, and they might put the code on the running servers, but they're not going to enable the feature for us, the users, until, you know, they might do it on a percentage basis. Like 1% of their customers will get this flag flipped for them. So it's called a flag flip. So the feature is enabled in the code, but the flag is not turned on to enable it. So that's called a flag flip. So you might deploy the code. It means, like, compiling it, packaging it, testing it, getting it from the developer's, like, computer out to the live running servers. Yeah, it's doing all the work. It's more than, yes, it's making it available and doing all the necessary work, like running it through the unit tests, getting it code reviewed, packaging it, compiling it, deploying it. That's a good question. Well, you could answer that any number of ways, but actually, I don't know the answer to that question. I mean, you could do it in terms of requests per second or bytes per second of data sent. I mean, I think YouTube is definitely one of the biggest websites in the world for amount of data that's transferred. But in terms of requests per second, like each individual search is probably more, but the bytes is a lot less because the page just has text and few images. So it's hard to say. There's not one right answer for that question. You have to be more specific. Oh, user interface. So, you know, you might, sometimes companies like to change the look of it. That's called the user interface. So.
Thank you, Yahoo. They change it about every year.
Yeah, okay. So the other thing that makes it hard between dev and ops is that the dev team knows there's an information asymmetry. So they have all the information about the code they wrote, and but ops doesn't know the code base. And, of course, if you're carrying the pager for something that you're not very familiar with, of course you're going to be resistant to pushing new changes. So you get into this dynamic where maybe the dev team has this brand new big feature, but they're just going to call it a like incremental change and put it behind a flag flip to sneak it behind the ops, the ops people. So the point is that the team that knows the least about the code has the biggest incentive to stop the release of it, which slows down product development and getting new features out to users. So is the conflict inevitable? The answer is no. Google's figured out a good way to solve this problem. The key thing is that the way we do that is SREs don't attempt to gauge the risk of the developers pushing stuff out. We basically leave the risk management up to them. But before I'm going to get into it, I'm going to get into some concepts of an error budget and SLA. So I'm going to take a little detour and explain what this is all about. I'm going to get into that. So SLA is short for service level agreement. I mean, you can think about if you have home internet connection. Actually, typically there's no SLA there, but let's say you're a company and you get power from the power company, right? You expect a certain level of service of your power being up all the time, right? So their service level agreement is extremely high, and you might have a contract with them that says, if my power goes out for more than 5 minutes in a month, then I get a certain amount of dollars back, right? So we have the same type of concept. In our case, it's a little different. Our SLAs might measure what's called the uptime, like what percentage of time is Google Maps available on the internet versus the times that are not. We also might have a latency SLA, like how quickly did it take for Google Maps to respond to your query. So we might say the uptime of Google Maps, I'm just making these up. These do not reflect the actual numbers, and I can't say what they actually are, but let's say there were 99.9% of the time Google Maps is up, and it has to respond within 100 milliseconds, okay? So those could be some SLAs that Google has for itself for the service. The other key part is the SLA is not met, then there's a ramification for it. So there might be some financial, like if I am a user of Google Cloud services, then we actually do have a published SLA, and if something happens, then Google misses the SLA numbers, then we will refund some amount of money to you. So things that you expect to have 100% SLA is like a pacemaker, right? If you have this in you, you do not want it failing at all, right? Because it has disastrous ramifications. Now, what we found is that in practice, most technology devices do not need and don't operate at 100% SLA. Your phone, you power cycle it, you know, runs out of power, it turns off. It's not working, so it's out of SLA. Your laptops and desktops will break all the time. So Google actually doesn't run at 100% SLA. It would be impossible to achieve, but there's just things you cannot account for completely. And every additional, like, 9 you add to the SLA gets maybe exponentially more expensive to do that level. So actually, a lot of times we'll ask our customers, like, what SLA do you need? And we'll just try to match that. We don't try to go to the super extent past that. Now, there's some things like Google, like search, everybody expects to be up all the time, so it has an extremely high SLA. So just to give you a sense of what SLA numbers, if somebody's telling you they have their first row is 90%, so if they say, yeah, we'll give you a 90% SLA, well, then that service could be down 16 hours a week. So that's a very weak SLA. 99, we call it 99%, would be down 1.7 hours a week, which is still quite a bit, you know, if you hit that. So now where it gets more interesting, 99.9 or 3.9s, you're looking at 10 minutes of downtime week. And some of our internal services run at 4.9s. And there you have 1 minute of downtime. So this kind of explains why our team is on a 5 minute on call response. Because if you want to maintain, the whole point of an SRE team is to maintain the SLA. So, you know, if you're down for 1 minute, then in a week you've blown the SLA for that week. So getting back to, I described SLA, now let me go into error budget. So, 1 minus the SLA is what we call the error budget. And this is what you can spend to do risky changes or just pushing code out. So this is the space where it gives you the space to iterate quickly. So if you have a SLA 3.9 SLA of 99.9, then your error budget is 100% minus that or 0.1. And if you're Google search and you're doing a billion, we call it queries or requests per month, then you basically have a million errors that you can spend in that month. And you can spend it any way you like. So I said this before, change is the number one cause of an outage. Roughly 70% of outages are caused by change, not just like fiber cuts or power outages. So launches are a big source of change. So the solution is spend your error budget on launches. Or if you want to run a sloppy service, then you can just, you know, spend your error budget on the instability. So the rule we have is if the service is running in SLA, then the dev team can launch whenever they want to. But if it's not within SLA, then they have to hold off their launches. So this basically is really, and you basically just, they have to wait long enough until the error budget's earned back. Like it's been, okay, we've had a bad week, we've blown our error budget, we just have to wait, let's say, 3 weeks to earn back the SLA. So this resolves, Yes. So this basically resolves the major source of dev, SRE, or ops conflict. It becomes a math problem and not like, hey, we need to roll this change out, you know. So basically, it's self-policing because the devs can roll as fast as they want. SRE, in general, does not get involved in, like, if dev wants to roll faster. But if they roll too fast, then they start to blow their error budget, and then they basically have to gate their releases. So, you know, SRE, as long as SRE and dev are in agreement on the error budget that's to spend, then everybody's happy. So shifting topics a bit, just how staffing works. So what we found is that you can throw people at a poorly managing system and, you know, basically have people do a ton of grunt work to keep that system going. And Google's, that kind of job sucks, and Google doesn't ask us to do it. So if you're on the dev side, it's so tempting to say, you know what, I don't see what these ops people are doing. They're going to just fix these problems, and, you know, it's kind of invisible to me, right? But what we, and then the production can say, well, all this work that the ops are doing, they're just slowing me down even more. So it's another incentive problem, and Google's put in six different ways to solve that, where, you know, just covering up issues and having people do a lot of grunt work. So one is a common staffing pool. So SREs are software developers. I'm a software developer, even though I am a SRE. And it turns out, so if you need more operations work, then the headcount for the SRE comes out of the same pool as your dev. So if you're doing a sloppy job and, you know, you need more SRE help, then, well, you're going to pay for it by giving up a headcount for SRE, and that reduces your feature development speed. So it's a self-regulating system. We also only hire coders. Well, that's the great thing about working at Google, that's tech people all the way up. I mean, my manager is a coder, his manager was, you know, all the... So the point about hiring only coders, we get bored if we have to, like, type the same command a lot of time, so we like to automate things away. We get bored easily. We do have a rule, if there's a 50% cap on ops work, so if you end up doing too much grunt work, then anything above the 50% gets pushed back to the dev team. So there's another incentive there for them to fix us stuff. No, this is the amount of work that SRE does. The ratio is much, much lower between SREs and dev for headcount. This is, yeah, the number, the amount of ops work SRE is doing, this is what that, the 50% refers to. So if it becomes too much, then it goes back to the dev team. And the other key thing is, like, we want to automate things away. So the point of automation is to scale the amount of effort, like, one human being has on the number of computers. So if we grow, if we double the size of the fleet, then we shouldn't have to double the number of people. You know, the automation should help that same person, theoretically, hopefully, you know, manage twice the number of computers. Or they have to at least hold back their weight. Yeah, there's an incentive to fix it. But, I mean, Google does support, this has high-level VP support. There are cases where dev team, the SRE, the dev teams didn't work well enough, and the SRE team got sick of paging, that they actually said, we want to hand the pager back to the dev team, and basically that's happened. I understand that happens every so often. So there is high-level support for... So the other thing is, like, if I don't see the problem, then I don't have to worry about it. Well, in some teams, the dev people do pick up the pager. So if they get paged at, like, just before the shift ends at 8 p.m., then that's a great incentive for them to go and fix the problem. You know, if they don't see the problem, then, of course, you know, there's less incentive for them to fix a problem. But not all teams do this. I kind of touched up excessive operations load on-call tickets goes back to the dev team also. So this is all about sharing. And I said this already. So SREs do not have to stick where they are. There's no requirement. They can switch SRE teams because many SREs, there's different job ladders at Google. But if you're a software engineer in the SRE org, you can always leave the SRE org and go back to like a product area and you can work on Gmail or whatever you want. So there's no, like, the devs at some point need to take care of the SREs, otherwise the SRE team will leave or, you know, hand back the pager. So let's talk about outages. So Google has outages, everybody has outages, but the main thing is how do you handle an outage? So as I said, Google does not operate at 100% SLA. It's okay for us to fail. It's not fun, but it's okay, and we have processes on how to do that. So let me go into that. So the two goals for each outage, for an outage, are minimize the impact and to prevent reoccurrence. If the same issue happens again, then that's a complete failure. But if a unique situation happens once, then you learn from it, you put in processes in place to prevent that from happening again, and you go on. Well, you could have a bug, at some level, we've done a ton of work to handle, we have so many machines, we just handle a failure. If there's a disk drive or some box goes down, it's just like managed, and that does not become visible at all. But you might have a fiber cut that, you know, takes out a data center, or there's been birds flying into power lines and, you know, just the whole data center goes down or something. So that kind of stuff happens. It's just random things but a lot of times it's bad code or maybe a configuration file that got pushed. Like there's times where you'll push a file. Let's say you have a process where you're always updating a file, a configuration. There's times when that file, due to a bug, got emptied. So all the configuration data was lost and it got pushed out to the servers. And then, of course, that broke everything. So what do you do there? Well, you put in a process where you go, well, you check the new version of the file, and it should be within 5% of the old version. Let's say the number of lines, right? If it's the new file is anything more than 5% different than the old file, then you alert. You might not page. You might open a bug and have somebody look at it. But basically, you prevent that file from going out anymore. So that's the kind of processes you put in place to handle a bug. There's this concept called defense in depth. So you'll have multiple checks along the way of different types of things to help prevent global outages. No, it's actually the opposite because the software we push is global and we have so many users, so they're all touching the same. If you have a hardware, like we have so many systems, if you get a single computer that dies in some data center, it's not even, you know, it's just a blip. It's not even noticed. So you might have some person that was just operating on that, you know, hitting Google Maps when it died, but they're going to come back. The system died. It's noticed. There's no more traffic going to it. We just route around it. So the code is actually more dangerous. The configurations, you can push a config file that can have global ramifications, can do changes everywhere. I mean, there's people like Google who have pushed bad configs that took out Google.com, you know, and that was a single file. So those are much more dangerous and have much more impact even if you lose a single data center, Google has so many data centers, if you lose everything in Taiwan, it's like, okay, that's a lot, but we're still up everywhere. So one of the things is minimize the damage, make the outage as short as possible. So we have no NOC. NOC is short for Network Operations Center. And I actually had to look this up, and my understanding of this is Operations Center where you have people in a room with a lot of screens. I don't know if you see the TV shows, you know, but these people actually keep an eye on things. They look at the charts on the screens. Well, we don't have a NOC at Google. You know, we don't want people to get involved in outages as much as possible. So we have good monitoring, good alerting that is trying to be as proactive as possible, telling us if you can tell a problem will happen before it actually happens, like, okay, you're filling up in disk space, you know, we're going to manage that. No, I mean, we're always alert. We're always probing. We're always checking our things running. I'm just saying we don't have, like in the TV shows, we don't have one big room with all the monitors up. So, I mean, my team doesn't have a knock. We're not keeping, that's not how we keep track of things. Yeah, I mean, there's websites that you can go look at the traffic and see how things are going. We just don't have it in a room, and we don't have people that's watching it and then go, oh, that looks like there's something wrong. Let's go call the engineer. It's all automated. Yeah, so when we get paged, we're typically not paged by people, actually. We're paged by automation. I mean, I'll just... So, in fact, we kind of, like, if somebody pages us, sometimes the attitude is like, why are you paging? You know, you shouldn't be paging. I mean, sometimes people do tell us there's a problem before the automation tells us, because we might page after 5 minutes of noticing, like, something, and somebody might call us immediately. But for the most part, all our pages and alerting is all automated. That might be, yes. Yes. Yeah, or if it says, yeah, you can't load your Gmail, or, yeah. I mean, a lot of times, yes, I mean, well, no, that's definitely, no, we typically that would, well, I shouldn't be careful. No, I'm not sure, but I would be surprised, because that could be millions of people emailing. So, practice. So, operational readiness drills are, but we have this thing called Wheel of Misfortune. It's one of our most popular events. So what we do is we basically effectively roll a dice and we pick a misfortune. Like, so the goal of Wheel of Misfortune is to train people how to deal with outages. So if you're a senior member of an SRE team, you might pick a problem. Like commonly, if there was an outage, I'll get into postmortems, you might recreate that outage for a new member on the team and have them deal with it. Oh, the question, yes, I'm sorry, I should. The question is, do you keep documentation on all outages? And the answer is yes, I'll get into that. So we basically handle the event, and we write this thing called a postmortem. So a postmortem can be a rather short or rather long document. It basically has a section of the root cause of the outage and a timeline of everything that happened, and then the steps to prevent a recurrence of this. So you might have a list of bugs that you've opened that need to be fixed. The interesting thing about the postmortems at Google is that they're considered blameless. So, in fact, I've broken things, and then I wrote a postmortem about it, and my name is in there saying, like, I did this thing, and it broke this. And there's no blame or ramifications out of that, because there was a failure in the process. Like the documentation wasn't correct that I did this thing or not. So that gets fixed to prevent another reoccurrence. We do have a goal that we only have 2 pages per on-call shift. And for some on-call, for tight groups that have a longer response time SLA, let's say you need to respond within 30 minutes, they can be a team of 8 individuals. But for a team with a tighter SLA, like a 5-minute response time, we typically have 2 teams in different geographical areas, one at least 6 people per side. The interesting thing we say is if your dev team is not actually generating pages, then they do not need an SRE team. So we will actually take away SRE teams from dev teams because maybe the code's not, it's just a static project. So if they're not pushing hard enough to cause pages, then they don't need an SRE team. So I kind of touched upon this. So postmortem philosophy, or postmortems are blameless. We assume everybody is well-intentioned, all their actions, you know, no malicious behavior. And then so everybody was doing the best they could. And we focus on the process and technology to prevent a recurrence. No, I'm saying we don't focus, not like, hey, you screwed up. You know, you're at fault, you caused Google $1 million lost revenue, right? We don't have those type of conversations. Instead, you say, why did it happen that this thing happened? And you focus on the process that permitted that to happen. And you fix the process. Maybe you didn't have a review system in place, or maybe something, you know, there's something clearly missing, that allowed this thing to happen that broke Google? Well, the SRE team or the dev team will do the work depending upon which system needs the work. Oftentimes it's both, you know, and they'll both put in additional code and processes to prevent a recurrence of the same type. Yeah, yes, they do.
What was your comment?
Does management look at that?
I think she's alluding to if you have a person who's a constant source of misfortune.
Well, there are people who have gotten promoted because they've caused a number of outages, but they go back and they write the postmortem, they do all the bugs, they filed it, and then because they've done such a good job of following up on that, they've gotten promoted. Those people have taken out Google.com, and they're still like Google. You know, they don't get fired. I mean, that's what I'm saying. If you were well-intentioned on your work, if you did a bad file change, or you changed a file, and there was no, like, you didn't do it maliciously, you just did that part of your job, and it had this ramification that you had no clue about, where Google does not punish you for that, you know? Well, I mean, typically, let's say you need to put in a new process, you're going to create a bug to track that, right? Well, this was a problem because it allowed something was missing that was there that would... Yes. We consider bugs on the logging. Let's say you have a monitoring system that missed something that should have paged us, right? That's considered a bug. Yeah, the postmortem is a Google Doc, and it will... The person in charge of the postmortem will typically write the postmortem, gather all the timelines from all the actors, the people, and there'll be a long timeline of, let's say, I mean, sometimes, you know, they could go on for days, maybe then outage or something. Anyway, you know, every time somebody did something, they're working on it, you document it, you know, at 9:30 last night, this person changed this file, and then at 9:40, the Google system pushed it out to the servers worldwide. At 9:50, the process is restarted. So you do that level of detail. And then maybe at 10 o'clock, somebody noticed, and then instant messenger, the on-call. So that's the level of detail in the postmortem. So you get the entire history of exactly everything that happened. And then you go look through that, and you go, well, where did the process fail? You know, what happened that this change was allowed to go through without, why did it go through? What stopped? Why wasn't there anything to stop it? So then you go, okay, what should we have had in place? And then you open a bug for each system that was involved in that that could have prevented that problem from escalating. No, I mean, Google does have many offices, but we do have a philosophy of people working inside of the office. We don't have the concept of singletons, like individual developers working. We like teams to be working together. Even though they might be a small team. Oh, yes. Yeah. Okay, so that's distinct. Are you talking about on-call or just work in general? Okay, so, yeah, if I'm on-call, then I can be at home or I can be in the car. I mean, if I'm on-call, then I will make sure not to be on the freeway where I can't pull over and, like, get my laptop out. So, yes, so being on-call, you can be out. As long as you manage your life around it, I mean, it definitely has a lifestyle impact. You can't be, you know, if you're in the shower and you get paged, you know, sometimes you want to avoid that. Or you definitely have to structure your life about being on call. Now, for general work at Google, Google likes to have teams, and they don't like to have individual people working, just like we call them singletons. So there might be a team of 10 people here and one person in New York. They're not that big of a fan of that, but that's a different. Yeah, they would like people to be physically located in the same office, on the same team. So just to recap, I think this is my last slide. So we hire only coders for SRE and let them leave the project. We have the written SLA for the service and measure our performance against it. We use error budgets to prevent or to have devs gate their progress. And they can go as fast as they want as long as their SLA is met. Common staffing pool. And 5% of ops works goes back to the dev team. We cap operational work at 50%, and then we typically around 30 is ideal. Let's see, we practice, and postmortems are blameless. So. I think that's it. Oh, by the way, Google just released a book, O'Reilly, on site reliability engineering. It basically has some of the practices that we've discovered, and we wrote this is kind of like the definitive book about SRE. So if you're interested, you can just search O'Reilly for site reliability engineering. And by the way, we're always hiring, so if you want to contact me for jobs,